Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, folks, and a hearty welcome to our drive-in theater. We have a wonderful evening's entertainment lined up for you, one that will provide several hours of pleasurable relaxation and diversion for you and your family. Did you fail to dress up for tonight's show? No tie, an old shirt and slacks, a house dress? Well, don't give it a thought. We're glad you came as you are. We just want you to enjoy yourselves. Don't forget to visit our refreshment center during the intermission or any time. You love the tasty array of snacks we have to offer. So will the youngsters. Everything is quality and so good. We hope you'll make this a weekly visit. Bring the family. Bring your friends.
And most of all, go ahead and drive off with the speakers. We don't care. They're your speakers in this drive-in. Good evening and welcome to Erie House Radio Drive-In Double Feature. Alfred Hitchcock once again this weekend. And oh my gosh, we're going to be off to a big start tonight. This is Dale K from Spook Show, and I am here with...
And my flower print house dress, Dave Binkley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And here with us, with the loudest keyboard in history, is...
It is I, Gar the Ghoul. I am not in Texas, and I'm really concerned about Dale in a house dress. But, okay.
Mumu. Yeah. In my size, yeah, in my size, it's a frickin' moo-moo. All right.
I had to go to moo-moo-moo size. What's your problem?
If you can get a cow in that dress,
mine is
moo-moo
size. Mine's a yeah, okay.
Speaking of moo-moos,
I'm so big my cowbell can't even ring right.
I think that's the name of a dating app in West Virginia.
All right.
Let's move along, shall we? As we honor the great one himself, the master of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock. What a better way to start this weekend off than a radio adaptation of one of his best films, The Birds.
See, it could have been...
Yeah, you know what? One thing I always wondered about that stinking movie, how the heck they got the birds to do the things they want them to do? I mean, it's like herding cats.
After the birds did what they did, that's what they did. There was a whole lot of doo-doo all over. It was
yes. As evidenced in Mel Brooks' spoof scene of the...
That may have been the funniest scene in the whole movie.
Yeah.
Albatross, I do recall. Yes? No? Yes.
But all that aside, in films there's always been animal ranchers, and they have that down to it. I mean, they have bug ranchers now for Hollywood.
There are.
When you got a movie, you got to have bugs. All right.
How do you reward a cockroach? Come on.
Don't step on it.
Actually?
It's reverse psychology.
It's not always like training in the classic sense, like you would pertain to a dog or a cat, okay, where something does something on command. However, they can be encouraged to move in a certain direction, often with little tiny straws and blasts of air that drives them from one area to another. They get irritated by that moving air, and they move in a different direction or something like that, or sometimes chemical things that they like, they'll follow a certain trail. There's all kinds
of
ways fire. To bugs.
Fire. Yeah, a spray gun.
Yeah, I don't think the ASPCA would go for that.
Yes.
Or that.
Unless they were fire ants.
So, speaking of directors in a moo-moo, we have Alfred Hitchcock in Amazing. Just.
I never thought you'd be the one to bring us back to Earth.
Here we go.
Woo-hoo. This is a red letter day, ladies and gentlemen. March 19th, 2021. Gar brought us back to Earth. That's the president.
That's right. Sometimes you just...
Oh, no, wait, he's sleeping.
God,
all right. No. Hey, what?
Anywhere.
Huh?
I don't know. I don't know what's going on. But,
and they said the Stooges couldn't do radio. All right.
Okay. Fogsbane is here. Hey, Fogsbane. Are you dealing okay?
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
Took me that
exactly.
long to find it.
it's at the queue. Yeah.
Yes.
I don't nah. have the No, that ain't it. But yeah, that don't work. Anyway.
It's all good. It's all good in the hood. The birds. Now, Dave, we did something based on Daphne Du Maurier's work
in the
past.
We did probably one of the first radio versions I heard of this. It was a story, of course, that Alfred Hitchcock based the movie on. We did the escape version of The Birds. And,
yes.
And that was only half an hour. This is a full hour with not all of the original. I think it's got a couple of the original cast, but I don't. Maybe it doesn't. Which is odd because Lux Radio Theater was willing to pay stars like $5,000 for the week to come in and do the rehearsals and to do the show. I can't imagine why you wouldn't do that.
I don't know. But yeah,
I mean, $5,000 is a pretty nice chunk of change right now. Just think what it'd be like in 1945, you know?
Yeah.
Dave, what do you get? What do you give a sick bird?
The bird?
The human flu? No, I don't know.
A tweetment. You give it tweetment.
Tweetment. Okay, so you give it a tweet. Oh, okay.
You give it a, yeah, see? Yeah, see?
That's not just coffee. No, there's more to the story.
No, that's not coffee.
That's not just coffee. That's coffee plus right there. That's coffee plus, my boys. Dabbling with. I remember the first time I saw The Birds on television as a rather young youth. Rather young youth. Most youths are young. As was I at that age. However, it scared the living bejabbers out of me. The tension that he built with the attacking swarms of birds, of course. But there's that classic scene where they zoom in on the guy whose eyes are pecked out. That was pretty horrifying for a young kid to see.
In radio, they didn't really go into that.
No.
It's more of a visual thing.
So, Dale, did it scare the youth out of you?
Well, I think it was just one of those things of horror that were formative for me and my interest in it. You know, Hitchcock talks about the beginnings of wanting to be scared.
The public have always enjoyed fear. It all starts, I think, when the child is 3 months old, little tiny baby in his mother's arms, and the mother says, boo. It gives the poor child the hiccups. Then eventually the child recovers from the shock and then smiles, and mother smiles. That's the first taste of fear ever given a child.
Maybe that's true. I
really thought he said he was going to drop the baby. I really thought he was, you know. And that's the first fear. And that's a fear that sticks with you, you know, because you bounce at least twice because you're a baby. But, you know, you keep going.
I wouldn't have put it past him to make a joke about that. He had a pretty morbid sense of humor in a very British way.
Dave, what's green and pecks on trees?
Woody Woodpickle?
Oh my gosh, you know that joke.
He got stymied. Again, this is truly a red letter day, folks. Gar has been stymied. You've heard it here first. Tomorrow it's going to be all over the internet. Dave broke Gar. He broke him. Dave, where do I send the $50?
Wow. Repeating the third grade 4 times really did help me after all.
Oh, What a welcome. Fogsbane and CW to the chat listening live as we lose our minds, our collective
you
minds.
You poor people. Hey, what, you know, with all the fear that Hitchcock installed in people, what do you think he would be afraid of?
A pickle.
A brunette?
Nice pickle joke. He was afraid of law enforcement. He was afraid of law enforcement and breakfast. Hard to believe he'd be afraid of breakfast. His lifelong fear of police stemmed from an incident in his childhood when his strict father, William, punished him by sending him to the local Lyneston police station on the outskirts of his family's home in East London. I was just sent along with a note. I must have been 4 or 5 years of age, and the head of the police read it and put me in the cell and said, "That's what we do to naughty boys." Hitchcock later recalled of the experience. Also, omelets were decidedly not his favorite breakfast food. "I'm frightened of eggs. Worse than frightened, they revolt me," he once said in an interview. "That white round thing without any holes? Have you ever seen anything more revolting than an egg yolk breaking and spilling its yellow liquid? Blood is jolly red, but egg yolk is yellow. Revolting. I'd never tasted it." There you go.
And here, I always thought breakfast was afraid of him.
I don't think any food was afraid of Alfred, but quite the master of suspense he was. As you know, as we have mentioned here a number of times, he was very instrumental with the birth of the great radio show Suspense.
I'm scared to tell any more jokes now.
Never
Watch
mind
out.
That 50, Dave. I'll make us 300 at this point.
I did a third grade 4 times. I know all those.
Oh, gosh, O'Rooney. Well, before they run out of popcorn, maybe we ought to hit the first reel of this radio adaptation of The Boys from Lux Radio Theater. I'll bet someone has a broadcast date.
Yes, someone does. It's a pickle of July 7th, 2019-53.
From Hollywood, the Hollywood Radio Theater.
Tonight we present Daphne du Maurier's startling tale, The Birds, starring Mr. Herbert Marshall. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Don Wilson. Tonight, we're presenting a brand new story by the famous author of Rebecca, Jamaica Inn, Frenchman's Creek, and many other favorites, Miss Daphne du Maurier. Now, this new story, however, is far different from any of these, and in many ways far more exciting. It's a tale I am sure will haunt you for a long time to come. The title is simply The Birds, and our star is Mr. Herbert Marshall. Our scene is London and the office of a successful publisher of books. With him sits Jenkins, his editor. Before them on the broad, shining surface of the desk is a manuscript, tattered, worn, its bulk held together with a bit of string.
Strange way to submit a story. You say there was no address on it?
No, the author left no address. But I wish you'd read it, sir.
You like it, huh? Do you think it's publishable?
I don't know. It's terrifying. I can't seem to get it out of my mind.
All right, Jenkins, all right. I'll read it. But mind you, it better be good.
Just read it, sir.
Title? The Birds by John Waite. John Waite. John Waite.
My name is John Waite. I'm writing this as a minute record of what has happened thus far because I cannot help feeling that in the recounting of these events, I may, in some measure, come to an understanding of what has happened, and even perhaps why it has happened. The whole business is monstrous and overwhelming, and I'm not sure that human eyes will ever fall upon this, my journal. I am a writer of moderately successful fiction, and this small house on the Dover coast is my castle, which I share with my wife, my 16-year-old daughter, my mother-in-law, and one yellow canary. The canary. His name is Chippikins. No, I didn't name him. My mother-in-law did. Chippikins belongs to Mother Dobbs, and bringing him here was an open and shut case of coals to Newcastle. For Dover is alive with birds. And it has been my daily custom, work over, to sit at the cliff's edge and smoke my pipe and watch and listen. The birds, soaring and wheeling in great rushing flocks, flickering in a flat gray sheet just above the grassy slope of the hills, and then bursting all of a bunch, erupting into the sky, restless, ceaseless, ever moving, flashing as one in a perfect arc up, and then for a split moment, almost invisible as in their turning, the profile, thin as brass, presents itself against the sky. And then as one, in cadence, back again, and with a slow chorus, gone. Black and white, jackdaw and gull, mingling in strange, restless partnership, seeking some strange liberation, never satisfied, never still. Flocks of starlings rustling like silk, and the smaller birds, finches and larks, scattering from tree to hedge and back again. Compelled. By what? And below, the seabirds waiting for the tide. They have more patience. Oyster catchers, redshank, sandaling, and curlew watch by the water's edge, race the surf as it sucks away, revealing the prize. Farther out, the fishermen. Slim, soaring gannets, ancient, patient pelicans, black gulls, gray gulls, pale gulls, soaring, sighting, and plummeting, wings folded, feet tight in, beaks out, knife through the surface, down in a flash of silver to the prey below. The autumn had been a long one, mellow and soft. The leaves had lingered on the trees, red and gold, somehow reluctant to fall. The days grew hazy and benevolent, shortened imperceptibly. And with their passing, the birds seemed more restless, more driven, more agitated. My neighbor, the farmer, drove his tractor. Long, even lines across the western hills, and his figure, silhouetted in the driver's seat, would be lost from time to time in the great cloud of wheeling, crying birds which followed his movements. And I remarked on this. Lots of birds around today.
Hey! There are more birds than usual, and daring, too. One or two gulls came so close to my head this afternoon, I thought they'd knock my cap off. As it was, I could scarcely see what I was doing when they were overhead, and I had the sun in my eyes. I have a notion the weather will change. It'll be a hard winter. That's why the birds are so restless.
My friend the farmer said the weather would change on Tuesday, and he may have been right. I'm not certain. The fact is, the weather changed that night. And it was that night that it began. I've been asleep. What? What's that?
Hmm?
Oh, something at the window.
And go back to sleep, dear.
Well, I'm going to find out what it is. It was a bird. What kind, I could not tell. The wind must have driven it to shelter on the sill. I went back to bed and, feeling my knuckles wet, put my mouth to the scratch. The bird had drawn blood. I supposed it was frightened, panicked, seeking shelter. The wind was indeed very cold. The weather had turned.
John, are you awake?
Yes.
Into the window, will you, dear? It's rattling.
I've already seen to it, Megan. There's some bird out there trying to get in.
Shoo it away. I can't sleep with that noise.
All right, dear.
Oh, get away.
Oh, what was that? What happened?
They went for me.
Oh, John, you're still half asleep. Come back to bed.
No, I tell you they did.
Yes, dear, of course. Come to bed.
What was that?
Mother, and you.
I'll light a candle.
No, no, hurry.
I opened the door to our bedroom and crossed the landing to the room Jill shared with Mother Dobbs. It was pitch black in the room and the air was filled with four birds. I could feel them all about me. I swung my arm. They crawled through the open window. They struck the walls and the ceiling.
Oh, Father,
Quickly, Jill, come out. Mother Hobbs.
I'm under the cover.
Run for the door. I slammed the door after them. I didn't want the birds spreading through the house. Now in the darkness, they sensed me and dove for me. Tiny beaks and evil claws, such a fearsome terror. I seized the quilt from the bed, wound it over my head, and then, swinging a pillow at random, I went to work. I couldn't see what I was doing, but I could feel the thudding of their bodies. I swung, till my arm began to numb. How long I fought with them in the darkness, I do not know. At last, the beating of wings subsided and withdrew. And through the density of the quilt, I became aware of light. I waited, listened, but there was no sound. I dropped the quilt and stared about me in the cold gray light. Dawn and the open window had called the living birds. The dead lay on the floor. They were all small birds. Robins, finches, sparrows, blue tits, larks, bramblings. Birds that ordinarily kept to their own flocks. Now dead and still in a shambles of feathers and broken glass. Outside it was cold, bitter cold. And the earth had all the hard black look of frost. Not white frost to shine in the morning sun, but black frost that the east wind brings. And across the field, the sea, fiercer now with the burning tide, it broke and crashed in the bay. Of the birds, there was not a sign, not so much as a sparrow, nothing but the east wind and the sea.
Want the wireless left on?
Please, Mother.
Oh, easy, Meg. That stuff stings.
I suppose, too. Don't want the scratches to infect.
No, I suppose not.
I'd say you ought to thank the Almighty they didn't get in your eyes. That's what I'd say.
Yes, Mother.
Nasty little creatures. One would hardly believe they belong to the same species as little chippy-chippy-chippikins here. You're a proper little gentleman, aren't you, Master Chippikins? Not a bit like those horrid little savages, That's odd.
What?
He won't speak to me. Speak? Speak?
Their bodies filled the sack. The ground had frozen during the night. It was too hard to dig. I went down the cliff path to the beach. The sky was leaden. The sea was flat, calm, oily. Not a sound of birds. I kicked a hole in the sand. And as I did this, I saw them. The gulls. Out there. Riding the sea. I had thought at first to be sea scud, wind froth, were gulls. Hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands. They rose and fell in the trough of the sea, silent, like a mighty fleet at anchor. To the eastward and to the west, the gulls were there. They stretched as far as the eye could reach in close formation. packs line on line. Somebody ought to know of this. Something should be said. But what? Could I call the police? Hello, constable? I want to report some birds. Oh, no, they'll think me mad. They'll think me drunk. Take my report with great politeness and thank me. But they were out there, waiting. Waiting. For what?
John, cut quickly. It's on the wireless.
What?
About the birds.
The Home Office at 11 a.m. today. Reports from all over the country are coming in hourly about the vast quantity of birds flocking above towns, villages, and outlying districts, causing obstruction and damage, and even attacking individuals. It is thought that the Arctic airstream at present covering the British Isles is causing birds to migrate south in immense numbers, and that intense hunger may drive these birds to attack human beings. Householders are warned to see to their windows, doors, and chimneys, and to take reasonable precautions for the safety of their children. A further statement will be issued later.
There you see. Wait till Mr. Bell hears that. And just now, down on the beach, I saw a million gulls riding on the sea, waiting.
Waiting? Waiting for what, Don?
I don't know. Well, the bulletin said the birds are hungry.
Also, if you see the birds, eat them before they eat you.
This has been a public service announcement from Erie House Radio. So, if Gar's broadcast date is correct, this movie predates, I'm sorry, this radio adaptation predates the movie.
Oh, yes. 1953.
Wow. Okay.
Supposedly.
Yes.
That's what it says.
Anywho.
I'm not
that was the first reel, if you will, of a four-part radio adaptation of The Birds. And we appear to be dayless.
They went away. They broke me.
Hold on. Let me turn them off and turn them on again.
And he ran away.
We have no Dave. We will become Daved again going forward. However, how about you, Gar? When was the first time you watched The Birds? Do you remember?
I do, because actually I have never in my life ever watched The Birds, ever.
Wow.
Nope. I caught this radio show, and I was like, that's enough birds for me.
Some people have a natural fear, I think, of birds, maybe because they can fly, and people feel disadvantaged somehow.
Yeah.
Dave, are you back?
Yeah.
Am I here?
You are now here.
Hello? I'm not here.
I had to shut you off and turn you on. And then you left and came back. We have Dave.
I didn't do anything. It's still went off.
I'm going to try one more time. Dave, why did the chicken cross the road, roll in mud, and then cross the road again?
I didn't hear that one in the third grade.
Because he was a dirty double crosser. Ah.
Why did the chicken cross the road? Part two. He was stapled to the punk rocker.
Ooh.
Oh.
Yes.
I was going to say Colonel Sanders was chasing him.
Could be. Linda Lou joins us, had joined us during the part one of The Birds. And she, too, just like me, mentions that was the first Hitchcock movie she saw on TV as a child. Pretty scary. Also, attention, the gas station scene, if you'll recall, when she was in the phone booth.
Yeah, the phone booth.
And
Did the film end at that point? I mean, she's trapped in a phone booth. The birds.
No. That was kind of midway through the film. Keep in mind, the movie was back in the early 60s. So the guy pumping his gas had a lit cigarette.
He made some chicken.
Good old days. How did we survive the good old days? How did we survive? But anyway, a bird dive bombs the guy and the cigarette lights up.
I'm sorry, Dale. That was petrol over there.
Petrol, yes.
Yeah.
Bird dive bombs the guy. He drops his cigarette in the petrol and kaboom.
I guess they were pretty careful with that petrol stuff.
Yep.
If it was a 1960 Hanna-Barbera cartoon, she would have lifted the bottom of the phone booth just up above her knees and run.
After calling Underdog. So.
Yes.
Wayne,
Holly's in trouble. I am not slow. Yes, go ahead.
Well, thank you, Wally Cox. Yes. The voice of Underdog. Yeah.
You know what's funny is, you know, he was already established in UK. Most of his early stuff doesn't seem to be around, even though the 39 Steps and the Lady Vanishes are considered two of the greatest British films, at least of early times. And but they did recently find one of his lost silent films, the
Is
White
that the
Shadow.
Lodger? Oh, no.
No, The White Shadow. They found that in New Zealand when it was long thought to be lost. It was a New Zealand version.
Oh, gives you a renewed hope for movies like London After Midnight. And the original Cat and the Canary is also missing. Oh.
And that is can be found on the Internet. If you look for The White Shadow, Hitchcock, you might be able to pull that up. I was taking a peek at that a little earlier today. So, And it's funny because although David Selznick wanted him over here, most of the major studios didn't want him because they didn't think he could make a Hollywood type of movie. And to that I say, thank goodness.
Yep. Did you notice anything about the little ad that I made pirating an old Birds poster? A little interesting little Easter egg, if you will.
Oh.
In the lower right-hand corner of the original ad was an X. That movie, for reasons of terror, was Certificate X, which was comparable to an X rating in the United States. Not for any body stuff, but rather the horror level. Yeah, even the Seventh Voyage of Sinbad was Certificate X originally in England.
But that pecking out of the eyeballs, I thought that was a little rough. CW makes mention that...
Yeah.
CW in the chat makes mention that Hitchcock made use of the MacGuffin, I'm saying that in theme in the stories, MacGuffin, and also that she was amazed that Daphne du Maurier, romance novelist, was the one that penned the story.
Yeah. Yep.
Said that wrong too. Not here to say things correctly.
I think every good writer can jump from genre to genre. Who would think that Stephen King could write romance novels, but he has. Why not?
Yes. Well, yeah, I've been known to write some romance novels, but, you know.
Are those the ones they have to keep behind the counter because of content? Or
It was a turtle? It's this turtle, and he was nearsighted, and he fell in love with a stone, and it was a one-sided affair.
Why did the chicken? Never mind.
peacock, 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 peacock.
I don't know. Well, he's getting clocked. Let's move on to part two of our feature, The Birds, from Lux Radio Theater.
The Birds.
Bling, bling.
Oi!
In the shed were all sorts of boards and sheathings left over from the blackout days of the war, and I spent the next few hours putting these up. There was no thought of my novel this day. Actually, the writer is a lazy creature and welcomes any diversion from his work. Somehow this seemed to be something a little bigger than diversion.
Do you think that's really necessary, John?
I don't like to take chances.
But they were such little birds.
I'm not thinking of those.
Oh?
The gulls.
I see. Are you going to do the downstairs, too?
I think I better.
A bit dark with the windows all boarded up.
At each window, the process was the same. I nailed the boards to the sills from within the rooms. And by the time I reached the kitchen, Meg and Mrs. Dobbs were listening to the wireless again.
The sky was so dense at 1 o'clock this afternoon that it seemed as if the city was covered by a vast black cloud. The birds settled on rooftops, on window ledges, and on chimneys. The sight has been so unusual that traffic came to a standstill in many thoroughfares. Work was abandoned in shops and offices, and the streets were, and still are, crowded with people standing about to watch the birds. We take you now to our roving microphone in Piccadilly Circus.
I've been standing here for hours. We cannot begin to describe the enormous variety of birds which are circling overhead. I have never seen anything like it. Standing beside me is the gentleman... what is your name, sir?
Jenkins, Peter Jenkins.
What do you think of the birds, Mr. Jenkins?
Oh, never saw nothing like it. I swear I never did.
Well, just before we went on the air, you were telling these people and myself about your cat. I wonder if you would mind repeating that for our audience.
Lord, lummy, they wouldn't want to hear none of that.
Oh, I'm sure they would.
Well, I've got these three mouses, you see. Big bully and alley cats they are, hard as nails. And out where I live, the birds keep a wide berth around my cottage. Well, this morning I looked out of the window and saw what we all saw. And I says to my cats, I says, all right, men, Arthur, Freddy, and you, Leon, out and at them. You see, one of their jobs, my cat's jobs, that is, one of their jobs is to keep the birds scared out of the vegetable patch. So I opened the door and they started out. Then they saw all them birds. And they just turned around with their back hair all up and their tails looking like porcupines. They turned and run into the bedroom and under the bed and wouldn't come out for love or money or the dish of cold water I throwed at them.
Thank you, Mr. Peter Jenkins. Now we have a lady here at our microphone. What is your name, miss? come on. There's nothing to be nervous about.
What are you doing?
Oh, I thought I'd see if the American stations have heard about it.
Listen to the mockingbird. Listen to the mockingbird. The mockingbird.
That's the American reaction. They never do take a thing seriously.
It seems that we're having a little trouble with our mobile unit. A number of birds have settled on the antenna. Well, can't you chase them off or something? We've got to complete this broadcast. Let's try throwing something at them. I don't know, stones, anything. Ladies and gentlemen, we regret this unfortunate circumstance. I'm sure we'll have the situation straightened out in a moment. Will you please bear with us on this most unusual of all days? And now we return you to our main studio for a brief program of recorded music.
That ought to hold it.
If you want my opinion, it's all nonsense. That's what it is.
Oh, Mother.
Boarding this place up so we have to light the lamp, and it's only 3 p.m.
Tell me, how much singing has Chippikins done today?
Not a note. He's off his feed, that's what. Look at him. He's so nervous and agitated. What with all your banging? See?
I saw. The bird seemed possessed. He flew from one corner to the other, his shiny black eyes flicking from one of us to another, yellow wings quivering.
John, look out there.
Where?
The ocean.
Well, you mean that cloud, that big black cloud?
It's not a cloud, John.
It was the gulls. A black mass of them that towered a mile high. They circled thousands upon thousands, lifting their wings against the wind. And they were silent. They made not a sound. They just went on soaring and circling, rising and falling, trying their strength against the cold east wind.
John, where
are you going?
I'm going for Jill. I'll wait for her at the school bus stop. You keep the door closed.
I'm frightened.
Keep it closed until you hear me call. Do hurry.
What's that strange cloud?
I can't tell you what. Let's race the rest of the way.
Oh, Father, you know I can beat you.
Oh, come on, then. Get your shilling.
Wait a minute. Look at the cloud,
hurry.
Father.
Jill, in the name of heaven.
Why, it's birds. Look, Father, birds. And it's coming this way.
Run.
But they won't hurt us, will they?
Faster. I'm almost there.
The bird!
Hey!
John, there's a Danny above you. He's driving!
Of The Bird, starring Mr. Herbert Marshall as John Waite.
My wounds were fortunately not deep. Had the gannet struck, I would surely have been killed on my own doorstep. The other birds, black gulls, white gulls, and so forth, have pecked and torn, but they were as yet still inexperienced at attacking human beings, and so had done no very serious damage. My preparations have been most fortunate. Throughout the afternoon, the birds assailed the house without luck, and we sat in the kitchen and listened. We listened, and we watched Chippikins. The madness which had seized the other birds now was his, too. He glared at us with malevolent hatred in his tiny eyes. Thrust his short, pointed beak at us through the golden bars of his cage, threw himself again and again at the little gate, hoping to break it down.
Oh, I'm afraid for him. He'll hurt himself.
Good.
Poor little man, he can't help himself. He must have caught something from all those awful birds outside.
Turn on the wireless. Let's have the wireless.
I'll do it. Father.
What?
The school bus. Do you suppose the kids are all right?
Oh, yes, I wouldn't worry about it.
I hope so, Chippikin. Do leave off that, darling. You'll hurt your little self. Yes, baby. Mama's here. Oh,
Father, what happened?
He bit me. Here, look at my finger.
Oh, I'll get the iodine.
And you can leave off that, John Waite.
As you said, Mother Dobbs, he can't help himself. I'm going upstairs and check things. Upstairs it seemed worse. What worried me most were the bedroom fireplaces. They were quite close to the roof, and I could hear many birds which had made their way down the chimneys. Now, with only a thin plywood thickness between them and the interior of the house, they screamed and scratched at the wood. I reinforced wherever I could, particularly on the windows. For wood, I tore the bottoms from the bureau drawers, knocked the panels out of several closet doors, tore down shelves wherever I could find them. And then, deciding it would be too dangerous to hazard a night upstairs in separate rooms, I started carrying down armfuls of bedding to the kitchen.
Thank you.
both bedroom doors. If they should break through the bedroom windows or fireplaces during the night, the doors would hold them for a while. And perhaps in their mad jamming of the rooms, they would smother. Perhaps they would die. At the landing, I piled as much furniture as I could. Made a solid wall of bureaus, tables, chests, mattresses, and so forth. Now, should they break through the doors, they would have this third barrier to assail. But by that time, it would be over. Surely. I regarded my handiwork with some pride and wondered. Outside, I could hear the birds beating against the house.
You know, as I recall from the movie, at least the protagonist John was a bit of a mama's boy. The little subtext that was going on in the movie, and there was a polite friction between her and John's girlfriend because she felt threatened. I think the mother.
Mm.
Or do I remember wrong?
I don't know. That's when you send the mother out to go check on the chickens. You know.
Yes. Hey, Mom, go check out the birds. I mean, chickens.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust her. I wouldn't trust the chickens in that movie either.
No.
I had a friend of mine who had, I don't know if they were pets per se. I guess they were collecting them for eggs. He had chickens, and he told me that if you introduced another chicken to them, into their group, if they didn't like the chicken, the entire group would just tear it apart. Not good.
I believe that is true.
That
is true.
Wow, there's really something to that hen house, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Perhaps that is so. Great radio adaptation. This is pretty thrilling. I like the way they're developing the story. It's certainly a bit different from the film, and who knows how different it is from the novel. I haven't read it yet. The Birds, CW says, The Birds, sponsored by Chick-fil-A and El Loco Polo.
Very good. Hitchcock was kind of an odd bird. And he was always dressed in suits on film suits, but he didn't socialize much when he wasn't filming. He also had a strange habit of tossing his teacup and saucer over his shoulder after he was done drinking. Teacup people would have loved him for that. For one of his parties, he dressed up in drag. It reported that footage of this was kept in his office. However, after his death, when his office was cleaned out, there was no sign of the footage, to which, again, I say thank you very much. I don't think I'd want to see that.
I think Herbert Hoover has that footage somewhere in his collection.
Oh. Okay.
Or not Hoover, I mean J. Edgar Hoover. Yeah, not
J. Edgar,
yeah. J. Edgar, yeah.
Again with the moo-moo.
Yes. Again with the moo-moo.
Again, moo-moo-moo.
That's right.
A moo-moo-moo. I guess he was always a big kid. That's why he was turned down for service in World War One, because of his obesity.
His girth? Good grief. Who knew you could get out of military service? Just, I'm having a Twinkie. I don't want to serve.
You know, Hitch was once asked a bit about the movie version of this.
For over 30 years now, I have been indulging in the occupation of raising goose flesh domestically and in England. I have only recently completed work on the latest picture. The title is quite short, just two words. There were three, but we cut the first word four. And call it simply The Bird. Naturally, most of the actors in The Birds are. In fact, I have employed more feathered performers than have been seen since Pan dancing went out of style. The cast also includes a few men and women. After all, the picture isn't just about the birds. It's about the bees, too.
Yes, we exercising his sense of humor, the great Alfred Hitchcock himself.
His humor was also displayed on a children's album, and Dave knows exactly the album and the drip, drip, drip of the faucet or the pipe or whatever. He's trapped in a basement. He's going to tell children 4 horror stories, released on LP.
Yeah, I don't think I'd be leaving Alfred alone with my kids.
Dave, are you there? Where'd Dave go?
I don't know. We lost him again.
Hello, Dave. Yeah, Dave was supposed to back me up on this.
Hold on.
Sorry about the LP.
Let me reconnect him.
I think it's called like horror stories for children or something. Hitchcock.
That's
LP.
Right. Scarier now. They have like Marilyn Manson reading that stuff probably. I don't know.
There it is. Alfred Hitchcock's Ghost Stories for Young People. It was available as an LP. I saw it in the 1970s. Not sure when it was released as an LP, but I had it and I listened to it and I enjoyed it. It was lots of fun.
Very good. Dave, are you back?
It was Alfred Hitchcock's Ghost Stories for young people was the title.
For young people. Right.
Ghost Stories for Young People.
Yes. And I don't know.
Alfred became so kind of iconic and synonymous with suspense and horror that, oh my gosh, there was everything. There were the comic books from Gold Key. There were, of course, the numerous, shows he had on the Alfred Hitchcock show. All the films he did, there were, it's just incredible.
Yeah.
Oddly, I'm not finding
paperbacks,
the...
Paperbacks, too, I think. Weren't there a series of paperbacks that were like Alfred Hitchcock series, if I'm not mistaken?
He did. They were also collections of his mystery magazine that he had.
Yes. They couldn't lend his name fast enough.
I never saw this. I might have been prohibited from getting this, but there's another LP called Alfred Hitchcock Presents Music to be Murdered By. That one I didn't get.
I would not put him past him at all. That sounds like in his wheelhouse right there.
The photograph of that one is he's got an axe to his head on one side and a gun pointed at his temple on the other side. Music to be murdered by.
Yeah. I do recall that, but I don't know that I've even heard it myself.
That's out of my wheelhouse. Except I ran across it when I was in elementary school. We had a book section in our library, and these were books that were. They were rebound so that they would last a lot longer. They rebound the books, and you would see Alfred Hitchcock in gold letters imprinted on the spine. You never knew what the actual book cover looked like because they had redone them, all the books. And there was a whole collection, just Hitchcock everywhere. You know, it was a big collection of Hitchcock books back then. Again, this is an elementary school We were growing up in the school of hard knocks there. If they were letting, I don't even know if Hitchcock stuff would be allowed in a school anymore. Things are changing so much.
Yeah, let's leave that at that.
I will. I just say, you know.
You're a wise man.
By the way, I did, while we were speaking, I did pull up one of those clips from the Alfred Hitchcock children's album that we can play because we will have some time after the Lux Theater, and we'll be able to play one of those. When you refresh, Dale, it should be down at the bottom of your page.
I feel so refreshed.
Dave, in your finding of that, did you get a date on when that thing did?
I didn't, but I can look that up for when we share that.
Yeah, okay.
Because I have it over my collection behind me, and I might be able to find it right on there.
Sure, yeah.
All right. What's the title of that soundbite, Dave?
It should be under Alfred Hitchcock Ghost Stories, Helpful Hitchhiker.
Okay, I'll believe you.
I see it there.
I'll believe him, too.
You may have to refresh.
I did refresh. It put it in alphabetical order instead of at the bottom.
Oh, did it?
So,
okay, then it's up at the top instead of the bottom.
That's a Blog Talk secret, folks. Don't tell anyone that they do it in alphabetical in alphabetical order.
It doesn't do
I'm
it.
I'm not telling
anyone. Even Dale does it.
Between us and you listeners, that's super secret Eerie House stuff. All right. To ensure that we have time for the extra feature, let us continue now with our part three of The Boys.
Wings brushing the surface, sliding, scraping, seeking a way of entry. The sound of many bodies pressed together, shuffling on the sills. Now and again a thud, a crash, as some birds dive and fell. Many would kill themselves that way. But not enough. Never enough.
John?
Yes, Meg?
There's to be another report in a moment. The man said so.
Good.
Yeah, I eat some cheese sandwich. It's good.
Oh, thank you.
This is London calling. A national emergency was proclaimed at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Measures are being taken to safeguard the lives and property of the population, but it must be understood that these are not easy to effect immediately, owing to the unforeseen and unparalleled nature of the present crisis.
Unparalleled? Get him.
Every householder must take precautions through his own building, and where several people live together, as in flats and apartments, they must unite to do the utmost they can to prevent entry. It is absolutely imperative that every individual stay indoors tonight, and that no one at all remain on the streets or roads or anywhere without doors. The birds, in vast numbers, are attacking anyone on sight, and have already begun an assault upon buildings. But these, with due care, should be impenetrable. The population is asked to remain calm and not to panic. Owing to the exceptional nature of the emergency, there will be no further transmission from any broadcasting station until 7 a.m. tomorrow.
Gramophone? Father, could I have a gramophone for my birthday?
Yes, sweetheart, a gramophone. It shall have the best that money can buy.
Mother, did you hear that?
Yes, Angel, I heard. Now, suppose we all go to bed. It's been a long day.
Wait.
Shh. What is it? I wonder?
Oh, probably a bomb of some sort. I wouldn't worry about it.
Well, I must say I feel better now.
Mother Dobbs, mind you say goodnight to Chippikins.
I'm not speaking to him, the ungrateful little wretch.
That booming, I knew the sound. The sound of an exploding plane. And I remember tales of flyers who had blundered into flocks of geese and ducks. Bodies that splintered propellers and smashed windshields. And what could pilots do against birds? Suicidal birds. But at least it showed that somewhere in the country they were trying. Somewhere in some small back room at this very moment they were thinking, working. And they would succeed. They had to. Had to.
John. John, wake up.
What? What is it?
John, they're gone. Listen.
What's the time?
10 o'clock.
10. That means the tide has turned. It's on the ebb. I wonder, Meg, do you suppose it would be that they only attack with the flood tide?
I don't know, dear. What are you going to do?
Where's the flashlight?
On the mantel.
I'm going outside.
What's happening?
The birds, they're gone, Mother.
Gone, you say?
Yes, John's going to have a look about.
Oh, don't you do it.
And why not?
They're all out there waiting.
Oh, Mother.
Waiting all around the door silently for you to open it.
John, do you suppose that...
Well, there's one way to find out. A scene of such violent death as few men have witnessed. All about me, wherever I threw the torch, lay their bodies, drifted as snow drifts, as sand drifts, their eyes bright in death, twinkling in unwinking points of fire. It was silent, so silent, yet I had the feeling that out there, somewhere, there was life. There was a shovel near the door, and I put it to use. First, I cleared a path from the door to the side of the house, and there I flashed my torch up. Every pane of glass had been smashed. The jagged edges flashed back my light. Many had birds impaled on them. Beyond, I saw the boards. They looked roughened and strange. There were flecks and streaks of blood on the boards, and a fine crisscross of splinters where the thousands upon thousands of bills had driven again and again into the wood. I shoveled the birds up against the windows and jammed them with my hands into the broken panes. Piled them on the sills and the cracks. A futile gesture. With the flood tide, another wave of assaulters would come and drive through these. But it would take time, and we needed time.
John, what are we going to do now?
I ought to go over to the farmers. They've got food there and wood. I need more wood.
Well, you're not to go. I won't let you go. I'll not be left here alone, John.
All right, Meg. I'll wait until morning, until the next ebb tide.
Sorry.
I understand you.
John, what's that?
Where?
On the hill. See? Fire.
It was just next to the spot where I'd spoken to the farmer as he drove his tractor. How long ago? 2 days? 2 months on the same little hillside. One of the planes, Meg. Come on, let's go back to bed. The second attack was much worse. There was something different about it, something I found difficult to analyze. And while I was thinking about it, I watched the canary. He too had been quiet during the lull, but now he stormed and raged again, beat at the bars of his cage. And I thought of the birds in cages all over the world. Parrots, lovebirds, peacocks, yes, and ostriches. What of the ostriches? And the great red flamingos and the big swans in the parks with their powerful wings and beaks.
Noise?
Noise?
From the chimney.
I don't know. Let's see. Sounds like they're trying to get at us through this chimney. You've got the fire. Get too low.
John, do something.
Here, give me that can of paraffin oil. Now then, everybody stand back.
Careful.
Back. This will clear them out. That's got it. Jill, you keep the fire up. Don't scare the wood.
All right, Father.
I'll start the promise. We'll have some cocoa.
Good idea.
Shall I check and see what's happening upstairs?
No, Jill. You watch the fire. Keep it blazing.
Poor Chippykins.
Now what?
He's set his wing against the bars.
Has he really?
Silly little man. Mama warned you.
At the head of the stairs, I pushed the barricade aside and listened at the bedroom doors. They'd broken in, and I could hear them screaming and scratching at the thin doors. And with the scratching, I became conscious of a new sound. that sounded like talons. Could the hawks have taken over what the gulls had failed to do? The hawks. The birds of prey. Buzzards. Kestrels. Falcons. I'd forgotten the birds of prey. And as I listened, I could hear the soft patter of thousands of feet across the floors of the bedroom. And the sounds of talons. Of splintering wood. I rebuilt the barricade, descended into the kitchen. The others had not yet noticed that soft patter just above our heads. I prayed that they would not. Outside, the birds continued to dash against the ground, against the walls. Those were the herring gulls, the suicide boys, kamikaze fighters. They had no brains. The blackbacks were something different. They knew what they were doing. So did the buzzards, the hawks. I thought of the things to do in the morning. There were so many things we needed to withstand siege. A car. If I could hire a car between the tides and use it to carry things. Food. Oil for the stove. Lumber and nails. Sheets of metal for the windows. Oh, so many things. I wondered. And worried. And dozed.
Don't you want to hear what the wireless has to say?
Yes.
Quincy, well, I can't understand it.
Don't touch the knob. Leave it on the home station.
I thought if I just jiggle it a bit.
No, no, they've made a mistake. They meant they'd go on at 8, not 7.
Oh, now that must be it. Ten after eight, John.
Maybe it's broken.
No, I've checked that. It's working all right.
Birds are letting up.
Shh. I thought I heard something. No, 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 nothing yet.
It's on 9 o'clock, Thomas. There's nothing on the wireless. Nothing.
I know.
What does it mean, John?
Don't you see?
Not even the shortwave. Not even the cold sea.
No.
Birds are gone.
Look at Chippikin sleeping.
Sure is someone, somewhere in the world, some one of the countless transmitters.
Shall we open the door?
Yes, there's a lot to do before the next flood tide.
Name Huggy Bear or something.
My name is Huggy Bear the Canary.
What's that, Dave?
I think Huggy Bear was from Vegas, wasn't it?
Or... yeah, something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
The only time I've ever seen goldfish in high heels was with Huggy Bear.
Okay.
Yeah, he was walking down the street and the camera panned into his heels. He was wearing some type of high-heeled man's boot, but it was a clear acrylic boot, and inside of the heel was a goldfish swimming around.
That's just wrong.
I feel sorry for
true
the fish.
True story. Well, I don't know how they would change it out. I mean, it would only be good for like a day, and then you've got to go get a new fish.
Yes, and depending on the level of one's foot care, I mean, mm-hmm. might have to change that more often, change that water. All right.
Excuse me, but your feet smell like fish.
Tasting like goldfish.
Ah, Starsky and Hutch. Thank you, CW. Thank you, CW.
Yeah, there you go. Yep. Good old Starsky and Hutch.
We can always rely on CW, you know?
To straighten this out. Yes, you can.
Yeah. If there's something we can't figure out, she gets us the answers.
CW, the war 1812. What year was that?
It actually
not the year 1812. Yeah,
I think it raged until 1814, but I don't remember. It's been a while since then.
Yeah. So Jersey, it did not start in 1812. This is a trick question.
That's like who's buried in Grant's tomb.
Grant's wife.
I believe that is correct.
Yeah. Ida Grant. Yep.
You to Grant?
Actually, Ida Grant.
Ida Grant.
Ida. IDA.
You
to
Grant. Yeah. You to Grant. Ida Grant. You to Grant.
Actually, that's the one president I'm related to.
Really?
Yeah. Ulysses S. Grant. My great-grandmother on my father's side was a Grant, and actually second cousin to Ulysses S. Grant. She actually sat on his lap when he made a trip to visit family once in Ohio. So
Dave, I need about $1,000. Could I get a Grant?
let me contact the VA hospital on that one. Yeah.
There we go. Yeah.
A Grant is also slang for a $50 bill.
It is.
Because guess whose picture's on it?
Groucho Marx?
Adame Grant?
Adame Grant, absolutely.
Adame Grant?
Adame. Udamai.
Udamai.
So how you feeling about our episode tonight?
Good.
I think
a Henway? Fogstein, what's a Henway?
About 2 pounds. Oh,
there you go. Thank you. More foul.
You know what
funny.
I get a kick out of? I do the grocery ads for the blind, and I get a kick out of these free range eggs. And I say, and they cost more because you really have to be careful hunting down those free range eggs. You get out, you run around, you can't catch them.
No, it's a circus.
They're actually labeled as free-range eggs. Okay.
They have little mini rodeos where they grease the eggs, and you catch the free-range eggs.
Yeah.
I would imagine that the free-range eggs would be along the lines of an Easter egg hunt, I would imagine.
Speaking of Easter, were we speaking of Easter? Well, we're
going
because the Easter Bunny is coming to town. That's in just 2 weeks, but more about that later. We'll have plenty of time for shameless self-promotion. Let's wrap up Lux Radio Theater's adaptation of The Boyds.
The Boyds. Yep.
And the B.
Now for station identification.
And now we return to The Birds, starring Mr. Herbert Marshall as John Waite.
Brief glimpse through the open door was enough. I slammed it and paused to consider this new dilemma. The birds were out there, silent and watchful, waiting. Not a single one flew. They stood across the yard and in the fields, perched on the fence and on bushes and in the trees, all silent, watchful, and waiting.
What are we going to do?
I don't know.
They didn't move, just like chippikins, every one of them.
Yes. Here, chippikins. Here's my finger, see? Go on, take a bite.
He won't move. Is he asleep?
No. No, he seems drugged or exhausted.
What are you doing?
Look at them. They're just sitting there. Here, give me that book. There.
It's like they're all hypnotized.
I'm going to the farm.
Then you'd better take me.
Me too, Father, please.
All right. I guess we better all go. There'll be things to carry. Bundle up warm now. It's better cold out there. We went by way of the fields. I didn't want to risk the road. It was a strange gray day, funereal, and the birds all about us, black and silent and waiting. These were the land birds. Out on the bay, I saw the endless gray carpet of seabirds, riding the soft swells of the ebb tide, and waiting.
Well, there it is.
Oh, they did have a time of it.
Yes. John, hadn't you better go in alone?
Yes. Yes, I think you three had better wait here.
I want to go with you.
No. I want you to stay and take care of your mother.
Look, John, the cows are unharmed, and the sheep.
I guess it wasn't them the birds were after.
Oh, poor thing, she wants milking.
Good idea. There are some buckets over there in the shed, Joe. You and Mother Dobbs milk some of the cows.
And I'll come with you, John.
You sure you want to?
Yes.
All right. Here in the yard, the birds sat motionless, watching. And on the roof of the house, and in the trees, and on the sills of the broken windows. Sprawled near the back door, I found the farmer's body. Inside, the place was a shambles. But the larder in the storeroom was intact, and we took sacks of flour and a tub of butter, and sugar and tinned meats. Supplies for a siege. Upstairs, called by the telephone, was the farmer's wife.
I want to try the wireless.
Oh, it's no use. Here, carry these things out of the car. We have much time, you know.
We're taking their car?
Yes.
Is it right?
Call it a neighborly loan, if you like.
We'll need more oil for the stove.
Yes, I'll get it. Come on, Meg, we have work to do. The farmer had been planning to build a new silo and stacked in the barn a large sheet of galvanized iron. I found snips, too, and a keg of nails. I was racing against time. The second trip I made alone. This time I was in search of lumber, hardwood. I tore up the flooring in the hall of the farmhouse. There was a bale of barbed wire. I tied it to the back of the car. And as a final, futile gesture, I went upstairs to the telephone. Oh, brother. One last look round. It was growing late. And the final gesture. Man lives not by bread alone. I took their gramophone. As I came down the little lane to our door, I glanced out to sea and my heart stood still. I couldn't believe my eyes. There were ships there. Great battleships, three of them. The Royal Navy, throughout the proud history of this isle, in time of crisis. No, I was wrong. The Navy was not there. The gulls were rising from the sea. The tide was turning. Help me quickly. It's time.
All right. Come on, dear. Bye-bye. Quickly. We'll have to leave the rest.
Yes, hurry. In the house.
The grandma.
No, not now.
It will only take a minute. Help her.
Oh, here then. You take the records.
Come on. They're coming.
What?
That sound upstairs.
They're in.
Oh.
I'm going to build a barricade at the foot of the stairs.
Can you do it in time?
I've got to.
And at the door. Sound is different there somehow.
Don't worry about it.
All right, dear. Mr. Skittlekins, you're an evil little man.
Father?
What?
These are all Harry Lauder.
Really?
Every single one.
Well, now, Jake, it may seem a little old-fashioned to you, but your father and I used to find him right in the cabin. And we were caught in.
Did you really?
There was a soft scratching at the windows. This didn't bother me. Those were the small birds. But at the door was a hawk. There I would put up sheets of metal, but that meant nails, and the nails were in the car. Still, I had the snip. Oh, there were so many things to do. Fortifications to erect. A plan of defense to follow. I've done all I can until the next ebb tide. The barbed wire stands in the hall. I intend to nail it across the outside of the window. I don't think they will be able to get through that. And the galvanized metal is cut to size. And when I get the nails, I will put it up. I am becoming distressed about the main door. The falcons, the hawks, the birds of prey continue to dig at it. But if we can but survive this phase of the attack, we may make out. We have food and fuel for a week. But with each new attack, they grow more intelligent. Their numbers are increasing steadily. When will it end? How will it end? And as I sit here staring at the pages I have written, I cannot help wondering why. Why the Almighty has decreed that this is to be the end.
Is this the entire manuscript, Jenkins?
Yes, sir. That's all there is.
Well, you're our editor. What do you make of it?
I'm not quite sure, sir. I wish I could talk with the author about it, but as I told you, the story was submitted with no address. I haven't been able to find a trace of John Waite.
Undoubtedly, he's one of those curious, shabby fellows who live in squalor and have great prophetic visions. You know the sort.
That's it, sir.
What?
Prophetic. That's what the story is. Almost a warning.
Oh? In what way, Jenkins?
Well, sir, I think it has to do with nature and her system of checks and balances. You see, what he's saying is that a man, with his ever-recurring wars, his new weapons of destruction, threatens to destroy not only himself, but all forms of life. And nature might find a way to prevent this.
By wiping out man, you mean? Getting rid of him?
Yes, sir. Nature, or the Almighty, call it what you will, just isn't going to allow all life to come to an end. And so, through the birds, it will quite simply take care of the situation.
Yes, Jenkins. Perhaps that's it. Perhaps. Who knows?
And now, once again, here is our star, Mr. Herbert Marshall.
You know, Don, it was a pleasure doing a story as odd as the birds, even though I do think you billed me incorrectly.
What do you mean, Bart?
Well, after all, I was scarce of the star of the piece when you consider the gulls and the gannets. Villains that they were, they ran the whole show.
Well, I suppose you're right, Bart, but after all, we couldn't bill a bird.
Bill a bird, indeed.
You made me say it, Bart, but seriously, you still like birds, don't you?
Oh, of course I do. But now I understand something I never did before.
What's that?
You remember during the war we had airplane spotters, men and women, too, who spent hours scanning the skies on watch for the enemy?
Oh, yes, yes, of course.
Well, tonight I think I've at last discovered what bird watchers are for.
Well, I give up. But anyway, thank you, Herbert Marshall, for being with us tonight.
It was a great pleasure. Good night, everybody.
Radio Theater is a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
Wartime music should always be this lovely. Puts me in a warring spirit, you know?
I can think of a couple other stories, Dale, where they found a manuscript and that's what they based the story around, as they did in this one. And what would be the radio mystery theater we shared about the vampire clock Time and Again. And another, what was the other one I was thinking of? I don't know why it just slipped. It'll come to me, but there was it was a suspense, the house on Cypress Canyon and, with Robert Young and, Kathy, Elliott.
Yep. Don't leave the theater yet. Don't drive out of the drive-in just yet. We've got more. And this. Erie House Radio Drive-In proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Never eat more feathers than you can pluck.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
What was that?
Okay.
It was the closest sound bite. That's what that was. they have to scroll like half the day. Yeah, Alfred Hitchcock, making scary, suspenseful stories, talking a little bit more about why we like them.
Now, why do people want to pay money to be scared? I don't know. It's a strange phenomenon. Audiences are really strange. They love to dip their toe into this cold water of fear.
That we do, and yet have the safety net of knowing it's not real. Hence, the horror film fan.
Question concerning the Lux Radio Theater presentation of The Birds. I did not hear Alfred Hitchcock in any of it. Was he part of this at all?
No.
Okay. Never mind.
No, I think they based it on the story, not on the movie.
Gotcha.
Well, no, this actually predates the movie by quite a few years.
I didn't know if he was associated with this or not. No. I wonder if it was on his radar. Now, here's a curiosity. Okay, so the movie, this presentation predated the movie. I wonder if he heard this and was like, I need to make this into a movie.
Well, I'm sure he was very aware of the short of the story. And Escape had already done it. They did it closer to 1950. Now here in 53, Lux did it.
Okay.
And, you know, but you never know where these things. I mean, this guy, his mind went a million miles a second, you know. And, I mean, he was in the middle of a movie when he stopped to make Psycho.
Mm-hmm.
We got the Fearsome Four in our chat room. I'm talking about CW, Fogsbane, Linda Liu, and Rob signing in. Hi, Rob. Thanks for joining us. You missed the main feature. However, we still got some more radio. Dave, you got us a little something here.
Yeah, a little bit of fun from the album that Gar was talking about. The Ghost Alfred Hitchcock Presents Ghost Stories for Young Children. And I used to sneak back when in the fourth grade I was in the special class. No, honest to God, I was. We did lots of tours and stuff. And actually, whenever I went, I could go back and go to the listening station. This is one of the things they had back in the listening station was this album. And so I listened to this all the time.
I think the biggest thing you got out of your education was all those bird jokes.
Could be.
And those truly were an education. Let's take a listen to this. I'm anxious to hear this. Alfred Hitchcock for kids. I love it.
I'm listing rather heavily to the starboard side. And unless I can paddle my way to the kitchen and find some high ground, I may not be with you much longer. Well, at any rate, whilst I attempt this intricate naval maneuver, here's a story about a man named Sam Preston, which I refer to as the helpful hitchhiker.
You probably never heard of Sam Preston. I didn't till one rainy night in spring a couple of years back. I was barreling along Highway 6 into the foothills of the Rockies in a 30-ton diesel carrying about 20 tons of high-octane gasoline. It was pretty windy, too, as I recall. But even though the visibility was not so good, I had to make time on account of that flat I had outside Omaha. Almost midnight, and I wanted to get to a diner and get some coffee because I needed it pretty bad. I was having trouble staying awake. I've been doing these long hauls for about 15 years now, but I never made this route. Anyway, I'm doing about 50 and staring at the white line in the highway, and rain is splashing off the windshield, and the wipers are going lickety-split. And then I saw him. Now, I'm not one to pick up hitchhikers. You never know. Might be a hijacker. Besides, we got orders not to. I got a glimpse of him as I went by, and what the devil, here's an old guy out in the storm and no raincoat, and it's a good 10 miles to anywhere. So I hit the brakes hard, and I could feel all that gasoline sloshing around in the big tank piling up the weight behind me. But I pumped the brakes till I stopped and then waited for him to catch up. Boy, was he soaked. He swung up into the cab and dropped into the seat. Thanks, fella, he said. Here, I said, and I handed him a towel that I always keep handy for washing and shaving. Before I even asked him, he tells me he was out walking and got caught in a storm. Wasn't going far, he said, but every little bit helps. Seemed like a gentle old guy, gray hair and all. Used to be a driver himself, so he knew all about trucks and long hauls. Said he stopped driving about 10 years ago, and now he had a part-time job. Didn't tell me what it was. His name was Sam Preston. Anyway, he knew the roads, and we talked some every so often. I'd glance over at him. The lights from all the dials on the dashboard gave him a funny look, like he was sitting there in a kind of a misty glow. And his voice was like a whisper that somehow cut through the noise of the motor. Those diesels make quite a racket, you know. Oh, he asked about my kids, which was pretty strange since I didn't recall saying anything about them. Well, after a while, he told me that the place he got off was just a little ways ahead, and so I started to slow down. Just before he got out, he told me about a diner that was about 2 miles up ahead, but said to be careful because of a hairpin turn just before you come to it. The curve was not so bad, but this time of year there might be rock slides, especially with all the rain. He jumped out and thanked me, and I leaned over to the other side of the cab to thank him for the tip, but I couldn't see him. Just like that, he was gone. I didn't see any houses. So about 10 minutes later, I ran into that hairpin turn, and it was a good thing I was taking it easy, because there in the road ahead was a great big rock slide, just like Sam said there might be. I left the lights on, and I jumped out. The truck couldn't get by, and I'd have to call the main office. I crawled over the big boulders, and I saw the lights of the diner. Just then, a state trooper car drove up and told me they'd have a bulldozer there in a couple of hours and I could get through then. So, I went over to the diner. I made the call and the dispatcher was pretty nasty. I was pretty nasty back, too, because all I could think of was 20 tons of gasoline exploding and me in the middle of it. Nothing to do now but wait. I sat down for some coffee and told the guy behind the counter all about it. I told him that if it hadn't been for Sam Preston hitchhiking, I might look something like those hamburgers he was frying up. The counterman dropped a fork, and he looked at me. Who, he said? Sam Preston, I said. Lives around here someplace. Maybe you know him. Used to be a truck driver. Yeah, that's right, said the counterman. Sam Preston was a truck driver. About 10 years ago, he was caught in a rock slide out there about where your truck is standing. He was killed.
I like a story with a happy ending. Abrupt as it may be, it was a happy ending, as far as I'm concerned.
There you go.
I was able to find some background information. I was the recording we were listening to was released in 1962 and reissued again in 1974, which was the one I ended up getting. And I recall listening to the entire album, I think on a Halloween evening. It was already dark and I was listening to that and I was like, man, it's really, really scary. And it had a backstory to it where there's this faucet dripping or a pipe dripping and Alfred is trapped in a basement slowly drowning.
Yeah. Oh, no.
No, no.
Save Alf. Save Alf.
And I was trying to find a date on the murdered to be music to be murdered by, and I was unable to find a date on that. Very curious release on that one. Murdered music to be murdered by is just easy listening music. And Alfred Hitchcock has this dark twist on these songs. And he, yeah, interesting.
He does his Alfred thing, yeah. You know, you know how much fun we had on Halloween, Dave, with the music, right?
All the music, yeah.
I'm just in the mood for something like, you know, some like hard stuff, the really hard stuff, like Deep Purple. I want to play Deep Purple. Do you mind if I play Deep Purple?
Oh, okay. Mm, yeah, well, why don't you do that?
When the Deep Purple falls over sleepy garden walls, and the stars begin to flicker in the sky. In the midst of a memory, you wander back to me. stars begin to flicker in the sky. Oh my, through the midst of a memory, you wander back to me, breathing my name with a sound. Where am I? In the still of the night. Again, I hold you tight. Though you're gone, your love lives on when moonlight begins. And as long as my heart will beat, lover will always be here in my deep
the hard rock I thought it would be, but that was Deep Purple, Spike Jonze.
You know, that's another one of those songs that I had no idea it was that old. You know, I remember it actually from, what, Donny and Marie. I'm sure it was before that, but I had no idea it went back that far, you know.
Wait, Donny and Marie? That's the 70s. I was thinking was like from the 50s.
No, what Dave's saying, he didn't realize that Spike Jonze went back that far.
I didn't realize the song went back that far. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's an oldie.
It's like George on my mind. I always relate that to Ray Charles, but yet that was a song that was written, I think, in the 1930s. I didn't realize that. I heard some really early versions of it because I always think of Ray Charles when I think of that song.
I just can't see Donny Marie trying to tap dance to that song. You know. I don't know.
Well, theirs was a little. This was a little more upbeat. I mean, they didn't have cowbells or anything, but there was a little more upbeat.
More cowbell. More cowbell.
More cowbell. Anytime you want.
There's that dating app again. All right. We still got Mo time for not only hilarious hijinks, but maybe perhaps another song.
Perhaps another song?
Another
song. Could you sing another song, mister?
Not taking requests.
You know, fellas, it's funny, but those old songs never seem to wear out. I bet you wish you could say the same for such things as G.I. shoes. Sooner or later, you and the supply sergeant will be talking over a new pair of shoes on salvage day. But remember, you can make them last longer by taking care of them, by taking care of all your equipment. And speaking of taking care, let's take care of requests for George Dundon, Navy 131, and Corporal Leon Leslie Mann, APO 33. They asked for Tommy Dorsey's Hawaiian War Chant, so here it is.
We'll be right back.
intro wasn't too bad either from way back when, and that was Tommy Dorsey, Hawaiian War Chant.
Yeah, it was G.I. Jill, I believe, giving the intro into the store. G.I. Jill on for the G.I. Jive program.
All about the salvage day. Yeah, don't hear about that too much.
Yeah, and I was thinking there was another Gar. You probably know this one too. Another big band that also recorded Wine War Chant, and it was Spike Jonze and his billed as Spike Jonze and his Wacky Keyans.
Wacky Keyans, yes, and I enjoyed that.
That's difficult to say.
Yes,
and it was a couple of years. A lot of things slide out easy.
Oh, it wasn't Red Road, but it was.
Don't put that in my head.
With Freddie Morgan, who did the slide guitar on that, I believe Freddie Morgan was their banjo player. I believe he did the slide on that.
I think you're right. And Freddie Morgan was a young comic out of Cleveland.
Cleveland.
Cleveland, yep. The land of Cleveland.
Freddie Morgan went on to produce, he actually performed and pressed an album. Nothing but banjo music on it. And he got a nod from Spike Jonze on going off and making it. It was kind of neat.
Yep.
Little background on the old Spike Jonze, folks.
I think that was early 60s. Spike wasn't making too many records at that time. He was kind of farting around with this Spike Jonze new band type thing.
Right. I think it was, I don't know if that, did that ever take off or did that, was that one that never made it out of the can?
Actually he sold some records with it. Basically that was his kind of his last hurrah as he kept trying to reinvent himself to keep selling. So, but he did. He was pretty good at reinventing himself. He just didn't. He was a guy that was confused by rock and roll. He said, "How can you make fun of it? It's ridiculous already." And so he had trouble with actually rock and roll.
Didn't know
how to make fun of it. Big band music you can make fun of. How do you heck do you make fun of rock and roll?
Here's an oddity. Did you know, Dave, that Ralph Margery on the album Music for a Private Eye had a song called Alfred Hitchcock?
No, I didn't know that.
It'd be great if we had that to share it, everybody, but we don't.
But we don't.
Glad you brought it up.
Ralph Margery, sure, why not? Exactly. I can send it to you, Dave, but I don't know if we get it in time. I don't know if that
will work. Well, we'll try to send it. We'll see what we can do.
Yeah.
Oh, well, okay. Let me try and send it. Here we go. Hang on just 1 second here.
In the interim, why not?
A
little more fun and frenzy here. I'm going to slip a dime into the commercial jukebox, which we have not heard in quite
some time. We've not played for a while.
Waiter! Bill, did you ever see such poor service? I'm going to call a manager.
Take it easy, Walt. What's mostly wrong is your grouch.
I'm sorry, Phil, but my digestion is so upset.
What you may need for your poor digestion is something that works after nature's own order. Try Carter's Little Liver Pills.
Good advice. When your digestion is upset and you feel headachy and irritable, take Carter's Little Liver Pills. You see, each day, nature normally produces about 2 pints of a vital digestive juice to help digest your food. If nature fails, your food may remain undigested, leaving you headachy and irritable. To feel cheerful and happy again, take Carter's Little Liver Pills. They increase the flow of this vital digestive juice quickly, often in as little as 30 minutes, and you're on the road to feeling better. Don't depend on artificial aids to counteract indigestion when Carter's Little Liver Pills aid digestion after nature's own order. Take Carter's Little Liver Pills as directed. Get them at any...
Do you like that?
Could you imagine that, a 12-ounce bottle of soda for only a nickel? Or pop, as we say up here in the north. Not soda up here, it's pop. Where are my sidekicks? My partners.
Wrong button.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
I think Carter's button. Little liver pills were replaced by Phenamint.
And it should be just about done. Whoops. Where'd it go?
It's fun even just to say Phenamint.
It's there, Dale. It's called Murder, Music to be Murdered By.
All right, well, let's do a quick refresh game. I expect to find this in the M's.
And, Dave, there was another one by Ralph Martery.
We got just enough time, Gar. Let me get this in here.
Okay.
Is this an instrumental?
I don't know. Sounds like it. We can
it's
talk
pretty
over
awesome.
It. Yes,
we could.
Do, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, there we go.
My name is Alfred Hitchcock, and this is Music to be Murdered By. It is mood music in a jugular vein, and I hope you like it. Our record requires only the simplest of equipment, an ordinary phonograph needle, a 4-inch speaker, and a .38 caliber revolver. Naturally, the record is long playing, even though you may not be. So why don't you relax, lean back and enjoy yourself until the coroner comes.
Running out of time here, so we got to let you know that we'll be back tomorrow night with Alfred Hitchcock's second movie in our double feature here at the drive-in, The 39 Steps. So that's tomorrow at 6:30 Eastern, and we end at 8 o'clock, which is just in time for
Horrible Horror, starring I, God of the Gold, blah, blah. Yeah, something like that. Okay.
Yeah.
There
you can just twitch your way on over there to watch Gar the Ghoul, horror host, doing it live on the internet. And Dave, do we have any sightings of weirdness really bad or Spaceship One
coming
up soon?
I'm going to invite everybody right here. First announcement that on the April the 11th, Sunday night at 7 p.m., we're going to premiere on Facebook Live our 100th episode, and this has 28 of the weirdness cast and crew contributing to this.
Sweet.
Sweet.
You don't want to miss it. Just keep checking out Weirdness Really Bad on Facebook for some information. You'll see it on the Eerie House page, too, I'm sure. I hope so.
And it will, and there'll be live live chat going on during the movie and all, and a lot of the cast members should be there because they haven't seen it yet.
I think Gar needs to be milked.
I ain't doing it. It's your turn.
No, thanks. I forgot my gloves. My special gloves.
Oh, it's so cold.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us and enduring us.
Boy, believe. That's right.
We'll see you tomorrow. Please, God, make it end. Oh, damn, the timer's right on.
Wait. Oh, there was no...
Who's starring in tomorrow's feature, right. Dave?
Are we gone yet? What? Okay.
Ida Lupino and?
And Robert Montgomery.
Yeah, that's tomorrow for the 39 Steps here on Erie House Radio. Drive-In on the Alfred
Ernest
Hitchcock Boardbag. Weekend.
Ernie's Borg. No.
And Garnish Coffee Cup. Thanks, folks.
All right.
And now, folks, it's time to say goodnight. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.
Woody the Wood Pickle. That was it. Yeah.
Yeah, we're out.
This has truly been a red letter day. We had the Boyds. We had
the Boyds.
Gar being stunned.
Woody the Wood Pickle. Woody the Wood Pickle.
Yep.
It did. It was a lot of fun. You wouldn't even imagine we never planned any of this. I tell you, it's crazy.
Some of the best stuff is by accident.
I know. I got to tell you, in all the years, can we say years? In all the years I've been with you guys, I don't think I have laughed so hard as the Woody the Wood Pickle.
Woody
situation.
Wood Pickle, yeah.
Woody the Wood. That caught me. Like somebody knows these jokes.
That was like a Harvey Korman, Tim Conway moment.
It was. Dave got
you
so good.
Busted character. Absolutely busted character. I love it.
I did. Curiously, I was telling someone today, I'm the best straight man you'd ever want to work with. And then today, wow. Nope. I'm sorry. Oh, just a sidebar since we're all here anyway. Dave, the Ralph Martyri music for A Private Eye Alfred, that probably is exactly an instrumental for the theme song. That's all it is. The other one was directly from Music to be Murdered By. That was the first cut on that album where Alfred spoke. Yeah, so that was. So you might not want to use. You could use it if you want as a music bed or something. I don't know. Okay. Anyway,
it was nice to hear Alfred introduce that, though. He wasn't afraid to get out in front of the microphone or the camera.
Mm-mm.
All right, and like I said, that Music to be Murdered By is nothing but easy listening music with Alfred talking very disturbingly on it, you know?
Yeah.
Which is funny in and of itself.
Well, you know, though, that was a time shortly after, you know, the EC comics where that dark humor that, you know what I mean? With the really black, dark puns.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of reminded me of that when he said that in a murderous vein, or however he expressed it. But it was the same kind of patter that the radio horror hosts and later TV horror hosts used.
Yeah, it's crazy that's what they did. They punned their way through murder and blood and decapitations and people losing
stuff
their
that
hands
makes life
and,
worth living.
Mm-mm. I tell you, I really wish that, you know, more surgeons had that type of, you know, bedside manner because it would really help.
Yeah. I don't know about you guys, but I've always been drawn to like horror and science fiction because it was highly unusual. It was nowhere near as mainstream as it is now in the 60s and the 70s even. You know, it was almost considered lowbrow entertainment, science fiction. It hadn't burgeoned yet pre like Star Wars and the movie versions of Star Trek, which really kind of opened the floodgates. And, you know, like dramas, just like everyday dramas, I get enough of that in real life, you know? This is my escape, my entertainment. Not to say that I'm not okay. captured by an occasional drama.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
In fact, Dave, I saw a cool movie the other day. I wonder if you know of this one. It stars Keir Dulea as a very young man, you know, the guy from 2001?
Yeah.
And it was called David and Lisa, and he's like a disturbed kid. He goes to a home for disturbed kids, and he makes this connection with this girl that no one else can. She's got like schizophrenia.
Is his name Lisa?
No, her name is Lisa.
Lisa.
Oh,
yeah,
okay,
he would be David. She would.
Didn't
be.
Know how disturbed.
Play in high school. I'm not familiar with the movie, but we did the play in high school. At that point, I was on the sound and lighting crew, but yeah.
Telling bird jokes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep. Woody Woodpeckle jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Pluto TV had been running the Birdman of Alcatraz quite a bit, speaking of Du Bois.
There's a tie-in. Sort of.
Yep.
Except that Hitchcock didn't have anything to do with it. But, you know,
there haven't been too many movies where, like, birds have been the main, you know, antagonist.
No,
Meredith.
Maybe The Rock and Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, the two-headed rock. I don't know.
Burgess Meredith as the penguin.
How about the giant claw? There's a horrible bird movie, The Giant Claw.
Oh my gosh, I giggled so much at The Giant Claw.
Marionette.
Yes. And curiously, I don't know if you know this, Dale. Yeah, I know your name, sure. It's in there somewhere. I have to stir this big pot, wait for words to come up. Anyway, at some point in The Monkees, the situation comedy of four wayward instrumental performers attempting to make their way in the world, at the end of one of them, they actually used footage from The Claw. I don't know why, but they put it in there. To punish us
and remind us of what bad movies really look like.
And oddly, the version that's in The Monkees, it's in color because The Claw I saw was black and white. I don't know.
Yeah, it was made in black and white. They colorized it.
Maybe they colorized it. Yeah, it's weird because The Claw is in The Monkees. And I was like, they're playing
you
a
sure
song. I don't know if it's
you were sure it wasn't Reptilicus? Because Reptilicus was kind of a marionette at times in some shots.
Maybe it was Reptilicus. I could be wrong. I might be, because Reptilicus, it would like Reptilicus, they're like throwing goo at the camera, right? That was Reptilicus. Yeah, okay, it was Reptilicus. Okay.
Remember the comical janitor in that movie?
I'm not cleaning this up.
he was kind of comical in it, I guess. He was known over in Norway or wherever they filmed it, somewhere in...
Oh, yes. Very wide-eyed, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is occurring guy. Yeah, that guy.
Yes, him.
Yeah.
I remember a scene he was freaking out about an electric eel or something that they had at the laboratory.
Yeah, he kept putting his hand in the tank. I wonder if it'll shock me. I wonder if it will. Yeah, it was like, yes, it will.
Now, there's supposed to be a European version where he actually does a little song for these kids or something.
What?
I don't know. Yeah.
Don't put your hand in the electric eel tank. Don't put your... I don't know what he would sing. What I don't know.
I don't know. The janitor, Don't End Up Like Me song. Because you'll be in a van down by the river.
Don't lick the electric eel. Don't lick the electric eel. I don't
there
know. What could he do?
There's a Ren and Stimpy song similar to that.
Well,
don't
the
whiz.
One about don't pee on the electric fence. Yes.
Don't whiz on
don't
the electric fence, yes. Don't whiz.
Yep. Okay, boys and girls, let's not whiz on the electric fence.
That was a board game, wasn't it, or something?
First you build your fence and then you don't whiz on it. Yeah, that's
yes.
And let's think. Okay, logically, all right. The board game is you set up the electric fence, and then part of the game is you get mother to make up at least 17 gallons of Kool-Aid, you know, and then you just sit there and
just
drink Kool-Aid.
Dad's car battery.
Yes, exactly. Dad, we need the car battery over here, you know. Hook it up.
Comes with a special outlet cover that looks like a fork.
Yes, exactly. Louie, would you plug it in? Okay, plug it in. Okay. Out of heart.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, the lawsuits
and,
we'll have.
You know. This was a derivative of the game Operation, and you hook that one to a car battery because, man, could you...
Yeah.
You know,
I'll
like,
teach
you
to touch the sides.
I tell you. That's
that
right.
One, yeah.
I got the liver, but I can't feel my right side. It's okay.
My right side.
You know, so...
That's good.
Yes. Here we go.
How can we laugh at the misery of others?
Dale, do you enjoy, would you be interested in, how do you feel about the Planet of the Apes, the movies from way back when?
Those are my favorite, the original five as a series.
And,
I like them all.
And how do you feel about the character of Dr. Zaius on there?
Dr. Zaius?
He's a theocrat.
He's a theocrat.
Okay. He is. And well, Dr. Zaius has come out, and he now has a talk show called Hanging with Dr. Z. And I really recommend you go seek that out on the internet, on the interwebs. Hilarious stuff. Sent me down a rabbit hole this week because he interviewed Paget Brewster. Paget Brewster, just for all those not knowing, is an actress who was on Criminal Minds for like 18,000 years. I mean, you've been on there forever. I don't know. And she's the character she portrays is this very straight legal enforcement officer person. You don't want to mess with her, right? I didn't know she had comedy chops. I saw her on Hanging with Dr. Z, and oh my gosh, I was like, wait, this. And I went and I looked and I found she was in Andy Richter Controls or Destroys the Universe, whatever that show was. I don't know.
Or Hannibal Lecter.
No, Andy Richter. You saw me on that, and I had to go look and see who he was. And
Cohort of Conan O'Brien, talk show host.
Yeah, excuse me.
Not the Barbarian. Okay.
No.
Well, he's got a sword, but it's not that big.
Only when it comes to delivering a punchline, Dale.
He's a funny guy.
And sent me down the rabbit hole, and I was like, wow. So
I'm going to have to check out Hanging with Dr. Z.
Rabbit hole. Yeah.
Hanging with Dr. Z. And oddly, we talk about birthdays every once in a while. Today is the birthday of the first horror host I ever knew about growing up. There was a guy named Bowman Body on Shock Theater back in
the
70s.
Body.
And the Bowman Body, his birthday is today. And he's
there's a bit of footage of him on YouTubes, on them YouTubes. You can find of the Bowman Body.
Boop, boop. Boo-boo?
I had an exciting project to work on when I was involved with the Horror Host Hall of Fame. We had a whole big room at the hotel as kind of a room for the horror hosts. If they had merch that they wanted to sell, they could set up in there and whatever. And we had a creepy castle table, and I put together a video. Oh my God, I searched the internet. I networked with people that my old partner knew, which without him, I wouldn't have probably gotten one third of the material that was on it. But I put together this big, long, Dave, I think you've seen it, haven't you? It had like clips everybody, starting with like Vampyra and Zachary, and then just moving on up all the way to the internet horror hosts as well.
Yep.
Well, it's a long time ago.
I just like, so he's 86, the horror host Bowman, the Bowman body is 86 years old today. And I ran across some clips of his, and this is amazing that you can work off this, is he moved to a different viewing area, and they set up the show a little bit differently. And there was a coffin that was standing upright, affixed to the set.
Yes.
And the door would open, and there was a mummy in there. Now, the mummy was a fixed prop. There was someone on the other side, and you saw the head and the hands, and that's all they had, head and hands. And they couldn't say anything. The only thing is, And Bowman had 100% of the dialogue, yet the mummy stole the scene every year. It was just, they did a communication with no words. It was hilarious. And eventually they did let the mummy out, and he was walking around and doing stuff, and he taught Bowman how to dance and all this other fun stuff that's out on the interwebs. It was a lot of fun to see that. And it was not the the program I saw where he was solo, because he had of course, you know, this other another
also one of the most
character.
Unusual horror host names too, the Bowman body. That's a
Bowman
great name.
Body.
Yeah.
And it was just the guy's last name and then body. That was it. It was Bowman body. A Bowman would be like an archer. I wouldn't. For some reason, I'm seeing someone that is like the guy that is ferrying you across on the boat across the River Styx is a bowman, you know. And
I don't know. Maybe it's something regional from where his show originated. I don't know, or where he's from.
No, it's literally his last name. The guy's name is Bill Bowman, and they just put body after it.
Oh, okay. Good enough. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. But it was a shock package. So we got this amazing intro, and this guy was just, "Welcome to Shock Theater with your host, Bowman Body." And that was it. And then, you know, it fade to this guy with a high-pitched voice going, "Hey there, horror movie fans."
It's just amazing how across the country, you'd have never known if you grew up in seclusion like I did, sort of. No, I mean, in the burbs, you're not really exposed in the 60s and 70s to national television, other than, like, the news. To learn later that every community across this country, almost every community had some kind of a horror host that was kind of a local legend.
Yes, a regional horror host. The understanding that Vampyra, who has been touted as the first horror host, she wasn't in syndication. That didn't occur until Elvira hit syndication coast to coast. So before that, it was just all these. And what we've done is over time and communication, we've been able to, you know, cobble together who did this and where are they from. And amazing pieces of videotape still exist. So
now you got Sven Gulli on Me TV, and
I will always nod to the first one for me. I always nod to that guy. I No slander against anyone. I don't watch the me thing because I don't have a television and I don't tune into that.
Yeah, you're not missing much. But I like me Roku. I can dig up the oldies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's true. So true.
And even older, we get to listen to these great radio shows and the music. I really do like the music. I think I mentioned, Dave, I used to have a big band night when I worked at the Marriott. That was so much fun. I had purchased these Reader's Digest because I was still spinning vinyl at the time. And I had purchased
those big collections? Yes.
Yeah, big band. And I mean, there was a huge, massive variety, and it was all popular in its day. You know, I mean, it had a little bit of everything. Benny Goodman, Xavier Cugat, anybody you could name. Naturally, Glenn Miller. But, you know, it wasn't like, okay, half of it's Glenn Miller and then some other guys. No, it was a wide variety of popular artists of the day. Some of the old Dorsey stuff actually has Sinatra singing on it.
Yeah, he was, I think as he got his first big break with Dorsey.
Yeah.
I guess he went to Benny Goodman first, and Benny Goodman's first reaction was, hey, you got to hook up with this Sinatra guy. And he basically said, who the hell is Sinatra?
Yeah, give that guy a sandwich, this skinny little, because he was, they used to parody him in those Warner Brothers cartoons.
Yeah.
And every time he would turn sideways, he'd disappear.
Yeah.
Oddly, one of the best renditions of Boots Randolph's Yakety Sax was pulled off of the Reader's Digest collection you were talking about.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Yep. Those were amazing collections, too. And typically the people who bought them really kind of revered music because I believe I got the Muse and they were like in awesome shape. So it was a great thrill to be able to use them as a disc jockey. In a nightclub,
and
a hotel
Reader's
nightclub,
Digest,
a classy one.
Reader's Digest did a great opportunity for collecting all those, but so did Time Life. Did some amazing collections.
Yeah, Time Life recreated the original recordings. They didn't just clean them up; they recreated them with big band artists.
I've always been. It was weird growing up. My father would listen to these kind of easy listening kind of band things, and I was like, oh gosh, oh. Yeah. And now I'm like, oh, this is great stuff. And it's like, why was I in such denial when I was younger? I don't know.
Yeah, I have an album. It was from the mid '50s, I think it was, the best of Kay Kaiser, and Kay Kaiser had already retired, so all the Kay Kaiser parts were done by a guy named Stan Freeberg. He did all the personation of Kay Kaiser.
Wow. Yeah, I think the answer, Gar's a little pondering there, is like, at least since the 50s and probably even the 40s, popular music has kind of been attached with a little bit, I think, with Teenage Rebellion. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Each new generation comes up with these new wilder, you know what I mean? And what you grew up with is what seems right to you. You know, we were talking about like remakes of songs. Sometimes I did not hear the original version, you know, on Wixie 1260. I didn't know at the time it was a remake of a 50s version of a song or something.
Right.
But it always seems right, the one you grew up with, even if it wasn't the original, that's what you connect with, I think.
Right.
I didn't get exposed to Spike Jonze until I was 20 years old. And then I was like, where has this music been? Yeah.
No, I was lucky. And unfortunately, it shattered, Gar, but I had the original 78. It was in my mother's record collection, and it just got so brittle it cracked. I was brokenhearted. Of Cocktails for Two.
I actually have some LPs, original LPs of Jones in the next room. They're not the 78 you're talking about. I own 78s at one point in time, and I let them go. Too much strain on that little belt on the old wind-up turntable thing.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a point where if you can't keep up with the maintenance, you might as well not keep the thing.
Well, Neil, we were also fortunate, too, because Superhost and even Big Chuck and Little John, to an extent, would use clips from Spike Jones.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, when we were very young, we were exposed to Spike.
Now, I forget I apologize for forgetting, Dave, but I can't remember. Did you live in Buffalo, New York, like all of your childhood, or did you move?
From ages like 5 until 12, so about 7 years there, yeah.
5 to 12.
Now
so
I want
to
know about
five,
the first
just,
4 years.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, they lived in a mud puddle. They moved every time it rained. I don't, you know.
Well, my dad's job, they didn't like you staying in YMCA work, the same place too long, because they figured you would kind of get stale. So they, you know, he got a chance to move up to program director at that point. And so that's when he, from there, when we moved back into Ohio, he moved up to, you know, executive director from where he was at. So, yeah, but the YMCA, at that point, it was independent. Now they're all seem to be with different hospital organizations. Is what a lot of the, at least the ones in Ohio, seem to be associated with, because they really can't support themselves very well. So,
does anyone remember when radio was something you had to have? I mean, right now, I don't think radio is what radio used to be.
Heck no.
In the past 10 years, I've known someone that was in radio, and they basically fired all the radio disc jockeys. They said, no, we have apparently a computer that can sit there and play these musics or whatever, and we don't need you anymore. See you later. Bye.
No.
There's a personal touch to that, isn't there?
Well, there is. Yeah. And you know, they had what we called the personality jocks, Dave and I did, like in this, and maybe you caught the tail end of it, or I don't know.
I did. Yes.
Yeah, they were wild and crazy. And,
In the 70s. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's gone. They don't want to, I don't think corporate America wants any individual to get as powerful as someone like a Howard Stern got to be at one point, or, you know, for a variety of reasons, controversial behavior or topics or whatever. But they want to control that. And
well, the more popular they got, the more it cost them.
Yeah.
And even with television and all the communications we had growing up and everything, the radio was going to be your number one spot for something's going on. Let's tell everybody. But today, like we've had some tornadoes. We had tornadoes yesterday north of my area, which is kind of odd. We don't typically have them. But if I would dare say that there's some radio stations that didn't even report it, because they were computers just going, they weren't tuned in to the attention. Something dangerous is happening. You might know.
Run
for the hills, run. You know, but there was no one to tell you. Run, you know. So, I kind of don't like the direction a lot of things have taken. But it could be in my elder age, I've become a curmudgeon.
Well, there's some fun in being curmudgeonly, I think.
Yeah, there is.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, you get to complain about everything.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Nobody listens, but sure. Yeah, knock stuff out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Dale, another amazing collection of music was the Rhino.
Rhino anything.
Bachelor's. Oh, Rhino's Bachelor's Den, I think it was called. It was this huge, like 60 CD set. I mean, it was. I've got it on one of my computers. It's crazy. It's crazy. It's so big. And all the music that you never wanted to hear, you know, just everything. Crazy. Rhino Records.
What's wrong with KTEL?
Yeah. I haven't found
I'll tell you
CD
what's
set.
Wrong with KTEL. KTEL played shortened versions. They were even shorter than the radio versions. To cram as many as 20 songs on an album.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did.
Yeah, I never thought about that.
They clipped them down, baby.
Casey Kasem did on American Top 40.
Horrible Horror, I played a commercial for KTL. KTL, 78 of your favorite songs, all on one record.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, it was like,
now
I
you
forgot.
Know how they did it.
Yes. You'll hear the whole list of all these things. And they got the world's fastest speaker to sit there and tell you, you know, Sly and the Family Stone. And all of that.
Crazy. Yeah, I think at that time the average song length was probably somewhere between 2.5 to 3 minutes, and they would make like these minute 45-second versions by editing them down.
Well, yeah, well, you know, mm-hmm. I know they cut out a whole verse of when Wayne Newton said, "Did Daddy, Don't You Walk So Fast?" They cut out a whole stinking verse. I didn't even know that verse was there until I saw it on that Friday show. They did a kind of a video of it.
And don't you love finding content that?
Wait a minute, there's a whole other verse here.
Yeah. Dankeschön.
Dankeschön. Yes.
Dankeschön.
There's something amazing about finding content like that. That's just like, Dale, you missed it because I tossed it up into the Dropbox, and I don't know if you're tied to that. I sent Dave something I ran across from 1977. Patches the Clown is a local television person in Seattle, Washington.
Yes.
Burt Ward as Robin the Boy Wonder. It was a clip that sat there, and it was neat because this 1977 was the year Filmation released the New Adventures of Batman and Robin on CBS as a cartoon with Batmite and Batgirl and all of it. Well, one of the weird things was they hadn't finalized all this stuff yet. They sent this actor to go out there and push and promote the show.
Yeah.
And the way he promoted it was this: you're going to get half an hour of cartoon and half an hour of live action, Adam West and I in the costumes talking about stuff, or half and half. And he also promoted it for a month earlier than it actually aired. So you're getting this content on a local, and I was like, wow, this is cool. They bipped Burt Ward around in costume doing that as Robin the Boy Wonder all over, you know, to catch everybody, and just happened he ended up on Patches the Clown, a kids show in Seattle. It's neat when you run across stuff like that.
He was going to be up there at a car dealership or something. Yeah, so
yes. Yeah, that was kind of weird.
See, that is so cool, finding that stuff.
And what was weird is they had a man with like a mop on his head acting like a woman on there. That was a regular.
Yeah.
They had a regular character that was an ugly woman, but it was a guy. He had like 5 o'clock shadow. It was not. It was just.
Yeah.
What
deliberate.
Are you doing over there, Patrick? You know, it was just, yeah, it was absolutely. It was not creepy. It was funny for kids to go, oh, yeah, okay, here comes Griselda, the ugly woman character, you know, or whatever it was.
Griselda, the ugly woman character. What?
Yeah, whatever awesome. It was. I was like, yeah.
I know it'll catch on. It's a bit of a tongue twister, but it'll catch.
Yes. And Griselda wasn't her name. I was just, you know, plucking a good name out of there. You know. Well, you know, I've got hand puppets named that, so you know it's okay.
Hey, I like a lady named Ice. I like a lady named Ice Spinskaya. So what can I say? Who am I?
I don't know. Yeah, exactly. You know.
but she's a lady.
Hey,
you know what?
The good thing about being a nobody, if you get canceled, it's like so what.
Well, to everybody else, if you're the person, you're going to go, son of a gun, I thought I was doing something, you know. And when the platform I was originally on over 15 years ago, 17 years, it was 17 years. 17 years ago, I started all my old stuff. The people that owned the website sold it, and it turned into a website I could no longer be on. And so I went out and I started to, you know, try to find a place where I could do what I wanted to do, and everybody was okay. And I found one that was very popular with a lot of people, and I got on there. Less than 5 minutes on the air date, I started. I got kicked off the site.
What did you
do? I was
do?
Like, oh. I didn't do anything. I was playing there's a space movie with the mutant and the big headed aliens with the white hair. This Island Earth. This Island Earth, maybe? Yeah.
Yes.
So I'm playing that. I just started it up. I was 5 minutes in. Rip, see you later, bye. You're gone. The copyright.
Yeah, there's that little copyright thing comes into play once in a while.
Once in a while. So that it took me off, and I was like, yeah. And then I ran across another place and went there, and things were going pretty good until connectivity issues, and so. But yeah, that was the thing. I'm a nobody. Nobody's paying any attention to me anyway. What's it matter? You know, if you're not embezzling or stealing money from people, then what's it matter? You know, you're doing it. It's like inviting friends over to go, hey, I got this video. We're going to put it in the VCR and we're going to watch it. And who's got popcorn? You know, that's kind of what we're doing.
Yep. That's what they say in golfing when you jerk before you swing the club. It's called getting the yips. He's got the yips.
Yip. They did that on Sesame Street with
yes.
They had some aliens that showed up.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. They were weird looking little critters, weren't they?
They were amazing. But do you remember when they came into Ernie and Bert's house or something, or somebody's home, and they had a radio, and the radio was on, and they were like, "What is this?" And they were just like, "Yip yip 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 yip."
Didn't they also take those
characters to the first season of Saturday Night Live?
They might have, because I know the Muppets were on there a while. Didn't they do that?
They were on the first season, and
first
John
season.
Belushi hated them. John Belushi hated them.
I was – the only reason I tried to watch Saturday Night Live was to see the Muppets, and I never saw them ever. Growing up, Saturday Night Live was on. I was of age. I could have seen it, and I tuned in, and I never saw the Muppets because – the program would start and I'd probably nod off and I wouldn't. I was a little kid, so
yeah.
I was like 9 or 10 years old, and I was trying to check it out, and nope.
Yeah,
had the same problem with the horror movie too. Nod off, but in the times I could see it, I really enjoyed it.
I don't remember watching Sesame Street as a real young kid at all, for whatever reason.
Well, we were a little older when Sesame Street came on, Dale.
It started in 1968. So if you were already, 12, then no.
No, I was 8. I saw 68. I was 8.
You were 8. 8.
And I was already into Spider-Man and, the superheroes.
Yeah. I would have been 5 years old, maybe. I saw it in kindergarten or elementary school or something.
It was technically below us, but I still watched it because I was just in awe of the Muppets.
Yeah,
that were on. So
I remember them from Ed Sullivan, and I liked them so much on Ed Sullivan that I out of morbid curiosity, all right, it's a kid's show, but I gotta watch this because I like the Muppets.
Ralph the dog was a regular on the Jimmy Dean show in the
Yes, he was. And he was funny. I mean, they did a lot of good stuff on there. I've got some clips from the Jimmy Dean show with Ralph I show. The wild thing about Sesame Street, I didn't understand it as a kid, and I didn't understand it as an adult until I was in my early to mid 50s. I didn't realize that Sesame Street was supposed to be like a very impoverished barrio type of place in like the projects in New York. It was supposed to reflect that. I never knew that.
Me neither.
I grew up watching and I never knew that it was supposed to be a reflection of that.
Me neither.
Yeah, they lost me when they started, and this is not a reflection on anything, but they lost me as a viewer when they started having a lot of Spanish. They were teaching the children Spanish, and I couldn't figure that out. I was like, "Yeah, you lost me." But they started to integrate that into Sesame Street. And Sesame Street is just a very well-rounded, informational little thing for kids. The Sesame Street I saw in 68 is not anything like the Sesame Street that's airing now.
I didn't have a problem with them teaching Spanish. I was okay with that part of it. As long as they kept, like Kermit and Bert and Ernie and, what's his name? The crazy one? Gonzo? Not Gonzo. What the heck's his name?
Oscar the Grouch? What?
Grover. Grover. Grover the crazy
one. Grover. Oh, Grover. Yes, yeah. Grover. Oh, I like Grover. And also, if you were young, it was a great way to learn how to do voices, to imitate, you know. All the, I didn't have a problem with Spanish. I ended up taking Spanish in college. And it wasn't that. It's just they mentally lost me when they jumped into that.
Oh, I
see. I didn't know what they were talking. I was like, okay, they're talking a different language. And yeah, that's why I got lost.
Lost in space.
Pigs in space. That one. Pigs.
That was good.
Pigs in space. Yes.
Yep.
they were constantly trying to get rid of Miss Piggy, saying she was overweight, and they needed to rocket her off of the off of the ship. We're getting sucked into the sun. Let's jettison the pig. You know, and it was like, it was always something along,
something you used to hear from my car. Back in the day.
The engines cannot take it. We must jettison the pig.
Yes.
I was like, well, all right.
I can't believe I said that, but,
you've said a lot of things.
I am a naughty boy. I'm a naughty
you
boy.
Are. Well, you know, the one thing we didn't talk about.
Bad boy, Abbott.
You're a bad boy. That's right. The one thing we didn't mention is, you know, you're kinky with a feather, but if you use the whole chicken, you're even worse. You know, and maybe we should go out with that. I don't know. You know, but
it's probably getting to be about that time. What is it, about midnight?
Yeah, that was a bird joke. So that was, you know.
It's about 11:11.
It's 11:11. It's 11:11. Where are your parents? Yeah,
in lieu of Jimmy. Let us have a special good night from our guest of honor. Or our subject of honor.
The foregoing has made it obvious to me that we've had quite enough for one evening. We shall save the rest until next week when I shall reappear. Until then, good night.